Let's open with our traditional Om sound by focusing on three breaths. And with the deep in breath, today we're going to talk about gaining control of your mind. So everybody here has a mind, right? Where all our thoughts reside. We all have minds. Gain control of your mind from the Bhagavad Gita, the song of the Lord. The song, singing of the Lord. We're going to look at some slokas that will make us think, and we're heading towards how to gain control over the mind. So let's see what insight we can get. This is chapter 6, sloka number 4. You experience the true yogic state when you let go attachment to sense objects. Yoga state meaning God state or experience of the divine. When you let go attachment to sense objects, this is a large world. We have lots of sense objects, not only our things, our clothes, our wear, our hair, our friends, the world as we experience it, and our own bodies, and we even sense our own aliveness, don't we? Something we sense. So letting go of attachments doesn't mean we don't experience it. We're not off in a state of woohoo land. It's just we have those things and aren't attached to them. So that when the things come, we welcome them, and when the things go, we welcome that too, even when our bodies experience the time to go. We're not attached. We have our bodies, but we're not attached. And desire for the fruits of your efforts, we've talked about this a lot. Being able to act without being attached to what happens after you act. Doing something and being at ease with whatever happens. Open to all results. Open to success and failure. So here's a summary of all the teachings. You experience the true state of being in touch with God, yogic state, when you let go attachment to sense objects, and desire for the fruits of your efforts. So the scriptures are repetitive. They tell us the same thing again and again. Let's look at the next one. A person can rise up through efforts of his or her own mind. So having control of the mind is how one achieves this state. A person can rise up through efforts of his own mind, or in the same manner, draw him or herself down. This sloka has a bit of a warning. A person can rise up through the efforts of her mind, or in the same manner, draw herself down. So here's an issue. For each person is her friend and enemy. His own friend and enemy. We are our own friend and enemy. As you gain control of your mind, which is what we're going to talk about today, with the help of your higher self or your Christ consciousness, then your mind and ego become your allies. Your mind and ego become your allies, but the uncontrolled mind behaves like an enemy. And we've experienced this. We've experienced times when our minds harbor thoughts that drag us down and make us feel bad. One of the signs of your mind behaving like an enemy is when your mind takes you over with emotions of anger, resentment, and so on. One of the signs when your mind has become your ally is when you're able to see the mind acting and notice it and not be a victim of it. Here's some commentary on this, how to control our minds. What does it mean? Who are you and who is this friend? Who are you and who is this friend? Who is this enemy? There must be two of you there, the higher self and the ego self. Your higher self is making a friend of your lower self. Can your higher self, your Christ consciousness, make a friend of your lower self or your ego self? In other words, when your mind behaves as your good friend, you get all the benefits. And you see friends everywhere. If your mind behaves as your good friend, you get all the benefits, and you see friends everywhere. It reminds me when I was a young man, years and years ago, a student, and I went traveling. I went to many different countries. I was 21 years old. I went to many different countries traveling. And everywhere I went, I made friends. And everywhere I went, I saw friendly people. And later on, I talked to people who said, "Oh my goodness, weren't you afraid to go there or afraid to go here? What if someone harmed you?" And that was never my experience. All I ever saw were friendly people. And I was a friendly person too, I think. So in looking back on it when I was preparing these remarks, I saw that at that time, for me, my mind was behaving as a good friend, and I got all the benefits. And I saw friends everywhere. But if your mind behaves as your enemy, you hardly find a friend anywhere. With that inimical vision, you see everybody as your enemy, and when you perceive everybody as your enemy, you actually create enemies. I've talked to people who find that people are friendly. They traveled, or maybe in their hometown, they find people aren't friendly. Sometimes people in big cities will say this, "Oh, I live in New York and people aren't friendly here." They live in big cities, they're just, they only care about themselves. The story goes, a person like that who found New York not friendly decided they were going to move to a small town in the south where they had grown up. So they moved to the small town in the south to meet some friendly people, and they were unfortunately surprised because in that small town they found more people who were unfriendly. So they brought the unfriendliness with them in their mind. Right? That's the opportunity. When you perceive everybody as your enemy, you actually create enemies. So the enemies that may not have been there, you actually create. See enemies there. Now, isn't that interesting? When we look as a nation at our national enemies, how do we know who they are? Well, our leaders tell us, don't they? Our leaders tell us. If you volunteer to be a soldier in wartime, when you go to basic training, one of the things you learn is who is the enemy, in quotes, the enemy. And you learn how to treat the enemy. Now, it's not okay in your hometown or anyone else to kill people, for example. That's against the law. But in a war situation, if someone is your enemy, it's not only permissible to kill them, it's required not to kill them. It's required. Also, in the basic training, we can observe that the enemy is dehumanized. Respect is withdrawn from the enemy. The enemy is not a person to be respected. That's why it's okay to kill them. The enemy is not a person with whom you can take any spirit of generosity. No, they don't deserve it. And you have to close the veil of compassion with your enemy because they're the enemy and don't deserve it. So the mind can be trained to create enemies. Now imagine a poor soldier in Vietnam or Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria who goes there and, contrary to his training to find enemies there, somehow is struck that these people don't feel like enemies, that actually experience them as enemies. Some are more like people he has grown up with, maybe families, women, children. And when that soldier, by order and by what he's been trained to do, has to do some bad things to people that he's no longer sure of as being enemies, that poor person often comes home with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. All that training didn't help him when he had to do what he was ordered to do. He comes home stressed. So we create enemies, but yet sometimes the enemies we create, we're not sure they're enemies. So you can see this consciousness in our country today with the various movements. On the far right are people who see the far left as enemies. On the far left, people who see the far right as enemies. The pro-life see the abortionists as enemies. The women's rights see the anti-abortionists as enemies. We create enemies. And we do this in our minds. We do it through repetition of thoughts. And we get these repetitions of thoughts often in what we read and see, and social media has been a big source of putting thoughts in our mind and reinforcing thoughts that may have already been there. So people that look at one sort of social media get one sort of idea about who enemies are. Other social media get another idea who enemies are. We create enemies.
I watched a movie yesterday called Paradise Road, and it was a true story about British and American and Australian women who were on a boat out of Singapore when the Japanese invaded Singapore, and they sunk the boat, and many of them ended up on Sumatra, and they were in Japanese prison camps.
Yes.
And they were treated horribly by these women. Were the lowest on the totem pole, period. But anyhow, they started singing in the camp. Mm. They had somebody who could remember all the music and had written it down. And the officers who were guarding them fought them about it at first. And then one time they had a concert and they ended up sitting out there listening to it. And they were like amazed. Brought them close, the singing.
Yes.
And then one of the guards took the leader of the group, it was Glenn Close, out into the woods with a rifle. I think she thought he was going to kill her. And he sat there and made her sit there, and he started singing to her. He wanted her to hear it. And it was at the end, though, when they found out that the Japanese had lost, the women were cheering, and the singing had made them stronger in the eyes of the guards. So it really sort of flipped things, you know. These people aren't necessarily your enemies, they're the same in many ways. It was an interesting movie.
It's a great example of this enemy image business, isn't it? And how, even as a Japanese person who's grown up with honor as being one of the most important things you have, if you lose your honor in Japan, traditionally you commit suicide, harikari. So honor is so important. And then in the military, you learn honorable things to do, which is you don't treat the enemy well. And yet, here's a movie that shows that the power of music to go through the mind and into the heart and touch something deeper than the mind, even the idea of honor in the mind.
It is a true story. They use a lot of the music from the camps that they had sung. A lot of the people are still living from those camps.
I'm sure it is. It has a ring of truth to it.
Yeah.
Our mind. So this Japanese soldier who saw enemies everywhere somehow got transformed through the power of music. And rather than creating enemies, created friends.
I don't know about friends, but they found some connection anyhow.
So that's a perfect example of actually not controlling the mind, but the mind being touched by something else. This means, Satchinanda says, that if you are a friend of your higher self, and maybe that music touched the higher self in the guards there, maybe we could look at it like that. If you're a friend of our higher self, and if you have no enemy within you, then you see friends everywhere. Being a friend of your higher self.
Well, even the women there were distrustful of the other women from other nations and everything. But you saw them all sitting in the audience and tears rolling down their eyes as they... This was the only thing beautiful they'd had in their lives for a couple of years already, you know. It was the singing, so...
Our human nature is what I'm hearing. It has that loving aspect in it. And it's through our mind that we gain these images, enemy images and war images and so on, that get in the way of experiencing our higher self. And Satchitananda is here to tell us, if you befriend that higher self within you, Christ consciousness, and if you have no enemy within you, you see friends everywhere. This is because the world is nothing but your own projections. This is what we're coming down to. The world is your own projections. So we're going to talk about projections now. Ready? I must recount here an interesting thing I read in the news. That was spoken by Nancy Pelosi, who's head of the Democratic Party in Congress. She's the Speaker of the House. And she was asked about something, a negative remark that President Trump had made about someone else. He called that person a name. Sleepy.
Could be anybody.
Lazy, could be anyone. And Nancy Pelosi, when asked about it, to comment on it, rather than naming some names herself, she said, well, in my view, President Trump is always talking about himself. So when he names someone as sleepy or lazy or a jerk, he's talking about himself. That's all she said. I thought, wow. She nailed it. So in other words, she wasn't going to react to the name calling that she saw, because she looked at it as President Trump projecting his own enemy images. It reminded me of the chant in the conventions when Trump got nominated. Lock her up, lock her up, lock her up. I thought, my goodness, that's a projection. Trump knows he ought to be locked up for what he has done. And he projected that onto his opponent, of course, very effectively. The world is nothing but your own projections. Well, we need to learn about our projections now, so we can control the mind. If your own mind is inimical, sees enemies, it will see everybody as an enemy. If you don't know how to conquer your own lower self, then it acts as your enemy. How to conquer. It doesn't behave for your benefit or to your advantage. Instead, it always tries to fulfill its own desires, whether you get the benefit or not.
Is that your friend?
Excuse me?
This will apply to your friend, your inner friend.
Inner friend. Let's go back. If your own mind is inimical, this is your mind, not your inner friend, your higher self. If your mind sees enemy images, it will see everybody as an enemy. If you don't know how to conquer your own lower self, then it acts as your enemy, your mind does. It doesn't behave for your benefit. Your mind, your evil mind, is not behaving for your benefit. We often associate ourselves with our ego mind. So I am. No, we need to step back and see that our mind sometimes doesn't act for our benefit or to our advantage. Instead, the mind tries to fulfill its own desires, whether you get the benefit or not. The Japanese guards in the story you told were, the mind wasn't necessarily behaving for the benefit of those guards, was it? Or to their advantage to treat people inhumanely. They had been taught that way, and it got into their minds, the sense of honor. So that sense of honor, that mindset, was trying to fulfill its own desires, whether you get the benefit or not. Maybe the Japanese soldiers received the esteem of their fellow soldiers and their commanders from behaving the way they did. But if, in the end, their own inner self was thwarted, then, in a sense, they didn't get the benefit.
They say the woman who was conducting the choral group, because she went out one night and was attacked by one of the guards, and she shoved him and he fell into the latrine line, and they took her as prisoner again and said that she would die because Japanese men didn't attack women, and she hit him, so she had to die. So three of the women went to see the head of the whole camp, and he sort of tried to wash his hands of it and say it's in someone else's control. The lower guard, and yes. The woman said, "Oh, I thought you were the head of this camp. I thought it was your decision to make."
Mm-hmm. So she was appealing to his heart, and he was coming from his ego mind, filling its desires, whether or not he got the benefit.
She was able to do what Nancy Pelosi did, is turn the tails on him, you know, and say, "No, I thought this was your decision," you know.
Yes. Well, a difficult thing to do in real life.
Yeah, not get angry, but turn the tables, yeah.
But we're going to look at some stories now, which will be sort of fun. So here's a story which illustrates just what we've been been talking about. It's a fun story, so let's enjoy it. Here we go. This story was told by Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. I put the dashes in there to help us pronounce the names because they're rather long. Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. Great name. But the dashes are something I stuck in. Here we go. A few people were walking along a road early in the morning, and they saw a man lying on the side of the road. Okay, this is the complete beginning of the story. So imagine yourself walking with a few people. It's early in the morning, and you see a man lying on the side of the road. What would you think?
What would I think?
If you saw a man lying on the side of the road, walking with some friends, and it's early
help.
In the morning. Pardon?
He might need help.
Okay.
He's sick.
He's sick? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Notice what your mind came up with when I gave you this minimal information. I didn't tell you how the man was dressed. I didn't tell you what position he was in, whether he was all curled up, laying out. No. And your mind gave an interpretation with just those minimal facts. And you can look at what your mind just said and what you just shared, which is showing how somehow we project something about ourselves. Can you look at what you said about this story of mental information as something more about yourself than about the man in the road?
Interesting.
Can you see that? We'll have some examples now. Are you ready? So what you said tells more about yourself than your idea of the man in the road. And that's what the story is going to illustrate and make it fun. Ready? The first man said he must have spent the whole night gambling. Maybe he was a gambler. He must have spent the whole night gambling and couldn't reach home. So he fell asleep here. Gamblers are like that. They don't reach home safely. Then he walked away. Number one. The next one spoke. Poor man. He must be very ill. We shouldn't disturb a sick man. Let him rest there. Now you have to understand that this is a Hindu story. It's a Hindu story. So it wasn't for us, it's for people. And in the Hindu tradition, if someone is sick, especially not a family member, but someone, you're brought up not to touch that person. If someone is sick, you don't touch them. No, it's different for a family member. So that's the consciousness of this man. We shouldn't disturb a sick man. That's what he was taught. That was honor. Let him rest there. And then he walked away. All projections. The third one came and said to the man on the roadside, "You're a bum. You don't know how to drink. Don't you know one or two is enough? Probably they gave you free drinks, and now you're down." He treated him as a drunkard. The first fellow thought the man had been gambling and was sleeping. The second thought he was sick. And the third thought he was drunk. Then the fourth man spoke. "A saint doesn't care where he is. Probably he's in higher consciousness, samadhi. A saint can be anywhere." He may be near the ditch, near the river, in a temple, sitting and meditating, or even lying down meditating. This man is probably above physical consciousness. Let's not disturb him. He then bowed and walked away. Nice story about projection, huh? We don't know who was right. All four men may have been wrong. We had our own projection, didn't we, with the minimal information. They all saw the same person differently because they projected themselves, just like we did. And that's what we do. Got the lesson?
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes, beautiful.
And there's nothing to be criticized by what we do, projecting. Rather, the lesson here is, can we control our minds so we have some control over what we project? When I was traveling as a kid, I didn't know that I was projecting a friend on everyone I met. I didn't know that. It just turned out I was fortunate to have that sort of personality. I was really lucky. And that's what I projected, so that's what I experienced. We project ourselves. So we have a couple more slides, then we're done. So I'm going to ask you, when you see this image, and remember, all images have a spin to them. The photographer takes the image with his own projection and spin in mind. Every single picture has the spin of the photographer. So what do you see when you see this picture?
Looks to me like they're waiting in line to go through a toll, and the biker's trying to decide, am I going to stay in line or am I going to go right up between all the cars and go to the front?
Is he a biker?
He looks like he's on a bike to me. I don't know.
So,
oh, maybe he's walking. He's gotten out.
Okay, good. No, we'll just listen to each idea separately.
Yeah, you're right. His arms are down. He's not holding my bike.
Okay, good. I got that. Now, what do you see when you see this?
I can see that in his mind he's conflicted, because I think he reached a point that he doesn't know. It's kind of, I feel like he's kind of lost.
Yeah, that's probably a better.
No. Whatever your projection.
Well, he's conflicted in my mind too. He doesn't know what to do. He didn't know whether to stay in line or go on up, but.
Mm-hmm. Good.
We don't know, right?
Anything else? No, we don't. Any other thing you see there? Okay.
Or maybe he's very happy because he doesn't have to wait there, and he's just like, oh, good, I didn't drive or something.
I didn't bring my car.
All right, we've seen how we project on this image our own self. Now, I'm going to imagine myself as a different sort of person, okay, and project what I see a different person might see. A different person might see this image and say, my God, that's one of those Hispanic terrorists. You see that backpack? It has explosives in it, and he's wondering how he can sneak across the border and maybe rape a few women before he blows somebody up. He's a terrorist. And he's probably from Guatemala or a place like that. Now, you can't tell that from the picture, can you? But I could project that if I put myself in a certain role. You see that? I could project that. I could also project on that person, wow, here's a man from Guatemala who saw some bad things happen there and is fleeing north because he wants to become a doctor and help people. He wants to cross the border and go to medical school.
Oh, that's the border.
Pardon?
Oh, that's the border.
I just thought it was a toll.
I looked at this as the border.
The border.
You see all the cameras and and you see the lines where the cars go through. These are cars crossing the border. That's what I see. Now, I'm not right. I'm no more right than you are. What we see here is what we project. That's the important thing. It may be we see other things and other people talk, and we may disagree with what they see and agree more with what we see or see new things, but it's all projection. All right, one more image and then we're going to close because it's almost time to close.
Yeah.
What do you see here? What do you see in your mind?
Bully.
Good. What do you see?
Just pointing the finger. It's nothing good about it.
Nothing good.
Nothing good about it.
All right. So in your mind you see bully, and in your mind you see nothing good.
First I thought lie, but then he was pointing and I thought he's attacking somebody.
He's a bully. Right. Man, you see nothing good. Just notice that's what's in your mind.
But try we've got a lot of proof of it.
Well, try and... I know, but try and withdraw from your opinion being right or wrong so much, and just notice that that's the projection in your mind.
When I say that nothing good about it, it's not that I am projecting myself that I'm not good about it, but I mean, if I would be doing that, I mean, I would judge myself as not being good.
Well, I understand. Now let's just take a step back here. This is just for our own self. Either you're going to go with this or not. You don't have to. In the prior image I showed you, we were somewhat neutral, weren't we? We saw some things and didn't see some things. Now I've showed you a more charged image, and know that the photographer that took this picture had an attitude and a point of mind. He wanted you to see this in a certain way. The photographer that took this picture. I don't think the photographer meant for us to have a flattering projection. But we can see here what our projections are. We need to close now.
But it's a news photographer, that's his job, to show what's actually happening, right? I mean, don't be fooled by what you see.
I would argue with that
okay.
In the following way. News photographers, when they take pictures, are no different than they project their opinion into the way they cast the picture. So I'm guessing the news photographer projected a bully on this man.
But they're also hearing what's going on.
And had in mind, before he took the picture, that this man is a bully, and he took a picture that looks like a bully. So the picture represents his projection on this man. I don't have another picture to show you of this man that would be presented in a Republican convention that shows this man smiling and looking beneficent and kindly. I don't have that. But you can imagine that picture, which shows a different projection of people onto the same thing. So let's close with the following words. The only way to see everybody equally, if that's something we choose to do, is in that divine vision, rather than our projections. Then we see the same truth. It's a challenge for all of us.
Yes.
The same truth colored in different ways.
Yeah, I was going to tell you that in that picture, I could see pain in his face.
See, there's a new projection I'm hearing. Good.
Even though, you know, like we are like media and everything and all the things that we capture and we have bias and you know, we judge and everything, but as you say, we see with the divine eye, and you could see suffering, or you could see something.
So looking at that image with a sense of generosity, more than the superficial, and some compassion, yes, perhaps you see some suffering there. This all reflects more our projection onto the image than the image itself. That's the lesson for today. We can choose to control our minds by stepping back from our projections and noticing that they are projections, thanking the mind for sharing, and taking a step deeper to see everyone from our divine vision. All right, let's go ahead and close because some people would like to go to the service.
Thank you very much. This was such a beautiful
So let's take three breaths together.
You were late.
Deep in breath. Such great participants, willing to let it hang out.
Yeah. This was beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jennifer.